Firm. Firm has, like, just kind of randomly, like, gone into my lexicon. Like, I'll do the... you got to be careful now.
Yes. Yeah. That's one of my favorites, you know. That's one of my favorites. Because when you talk to Herm, he'll hit you with that, you know. You got to keep Ricky from hurting himself now.
You got to protect him from himself now.
That's right. And just, you know, it happens.
I can't wait until Herm is like a constant on my television screen, because that means it's football season.
Yeah, I can't wait till we get Herm back on the show, which would be sooner rather than later. You know, you get into football, we start to get our steady diet of regular guests and also irregular guests. And, you know, with Ricky Pearsall being a big part of what the Niners are trying to do, it's a perfect time to get Herm on now.
Yeah, yeah. And, and also we had awesome about Ayuk. Because he also coached Ayuk at Arizona State.
That's right.
Pearsall and Ayuk were there together briefly before Ayuk went to the NFL, and then Pearsall went to Florida. But they were both there while Herm Edwards was there. So, yeah, definitely. I guarantee you that Herm Edwards will appear here on the station at least a couple of times during the course of the football season.
And we've got real, quote-unquote, football starting in 8 days.
Eight days, the Hall of Fame game.
And I say real because it's not really real.
Canton, Ohio.
It is football, and it's, you
know. Who's playing in the Hall of Fame game this year?
I believe they normally do it surrounding players who played for those teams going in. I think Chicago is one of the teams.
Chargers and Lions.
Nah, I was wrong. Whatever, Lucas. You don't even know where the buzzer is.
Who's going
in? Go back to sleep.
Is it Antonio Gates and Calvin Johnson? Who's going into the Hall of Fame?
I guess, but I didn't even say anything. I literally uttered an
Yeah, not even that is allowed.
Right.
Antonio Gates, Jared Allen, Sterling Sharp, and Eric Allen are headed in to the Hall of Fame this year.
Okay.
Apparently.
Sounds good.
So, yeah. Anyway, Hall of Fame game 8 days away, which signals the official beginning of the NFL season, Dibs.
Yep, the march through August, which is, you know, mostly, I wouldn't say that it's annoying preseason football, but it's definitely a little bit of a teaser where, you know, you start to get excited and you see your guys, your team. It's like, ooh, Brock Purdy and the starting offense, they got a series in week one. Boy, let's break down those seven plays. And
he threw two interceptions today in practice. Brock did. God.
I mean, cut him.
Rip up the contract.
That's right. And you remember Jimmy Garoppolo when they had the joint practice in Denver when he was a Niner and he threw like six or seven interceptions?
He's also just a terrible practice quarterback.
Right.
Like, he's always been that.
And this is maybe something I should say for Friday and what's bugging me. But what's bugging me, and it's been bugging me, is camp stats.
Okay, what about camp stats for kickers? Do you buy into that? Because I have camp stats for kickers today.
Okay, and I'm interested just because we've got an hour and 9 minutes left of the show, and I'm required to be interested, but I don't believe that in these kicker stats there were people trying to block the kick or people trying to block the people who were trying to block the kick. These are just kickers who are kicking a football against nobody. Like you said earlier, Jacob Cowing hurt his hamstring running a route against air.
Yeah.
That's basically what these kicker stats are. But give them to me, Grandy. I'm into it.
Jake Moody is in a battle with Greg Joseph, the veteran. Both went 4 for 4 on their field goals today, Dibs. And each of them made one from 50 or more yards. All right.
Okay.
They're both perfect.
All square through one day.
So through one day, Dibs, how do you gauge where this competition is?
Well,
Who has the upper leg?
Thank you. You almost went upper hand, and I love that you went upper leg. Upper foot would have been even better, but who's got the upper leg? It becomes interesting. I think that if they are dead on even, like through Shanahan's assessment and the rest of the staff, I do think you lean toward Moody because you drafted Moody. The third round draft capital, I do think, gives him the tiebreaker. I know that you're not happy about it, and Mitch Wishnowsky was a fourth-round pick.
How could you be happy about it?
Well, you could be happy about it if he wins the job and wins you a game.
Yeah, and then he misses a kick week two that cost them a game.
Well, Jake Moody, he was playing hurt last year, which...
Your words, Dibs. If you're playing, then you're playing.
That's right, and he was playing, and he actually is one of the ones who this offseason admitted to that. Like, I'm out there, and so yeah, that's on my resume. And I do think that if he's able to get through the adversity of last year, and also now you do have a new long snapper and you've got a new holder. So the operation, as we like to call it in football, of snapper, holder, kicker, it's a new operation, a new special teams coach, yeah, and
new everything on special teams.
And even Jake Moody himself, he has a new approach to the ball. He cut a step out. I think he was a four-stepper, and now he's a three-stepper, or he was a three, and now he's a two. I can't remember, but everything about what he's trying to do is new. So if he wins the job, more power to you. And he's got a big leg. I think last year was just a lot of things, not only for him, but for the team, the special teams, the operation, the whole thing. So I do think that if they are even coming out of camp, I think that he gets the gig, because you don't want to be Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch having to answer, hey, you drafted this guy in the third round and now he's gone? What's up with that?
Well, those questions might only last a week when the final cuts happen, but if you have him on the roster and he's not perfect, you're going to have to answer those questions every week, or at least every time when he's not perfect.
So true, but
if it's even, the bigger distraction might be having him still around. But
that's true, but if you replace him, and the guy you replace him with, Greg Joseph, if he comes out and he struggles, it's, why'd you give up on Jake Moody? You know, you thought that he was so good, you used third-round capital to draft him, and now you just threw him out? You threw the baby out with the bathwater? So it's really a can't-win situation with Jake Moody.
If the kicker struggles. If the kicker's fine, then it's not a problem, no matter who it is, obviously.
Well, and he has to be good because you used a third-round pick on him. So if he wins the job and he turns it around and he's as good as you thought that he was going to be, well, now you're kind of exonerated.
Yeah. Anyway, that'll conclude the special teams talk of day one of training camp. I'm sure it will be picked up a little bit later on throughout camp. I want to get back to Shanahan and what he told Tim Kawakami, but before we do that, let's go back out to the phone lines. 888-957-9570. Dibs, it seems like Omar in Oakland might want to come down your road a little bit here. Let's see.
No.
Omar, what's up? You're on with Dibs and Grandy.
Oh, you already know I'm coming down Dibs Road. I'm not even a Broncos fan, but you disrespected the legend Terrell Davis. He only played 7 years, the same amount of years that McCaffrey played with Hall of Famers like Shannon Sharp, John Elway, the legend, and two great receivers, McCaffrey's dad, Ed McCaffrey, and Rod Smith. And he still won a Super Bowl MVP, ran for more than 2,000 yards in one season, only won four running backs to ever do that, and played in only, I believe, 60 games or 65 games. Way less opportunities, except for more rushing attempts than McCaffrey, but his stats blow away Christian McCaffrey, and he had to do it with stars around him. If you look at Christian McCaffrey with Carolina Panthers, I don't even know who their quarterback was. I think it was Sam Darnold, and then I'm not sure who the other was, probably Mayfield. But it's like Christian McCaffrey has had way more opportunity, and he fumbled it away, literally fumbled it in the Super Bowl, where Terrell Davis won an MVP amongst legends like Shannon Sharp and John Elway. So you can't disrespect Terrell Davis for Christian McCaffrey, who would not go in the Hall of Fame right now if he retired. We all know that.
Yeah, I disagree with that.
Thanks, Omar.
Yeah,
stick it to him, Omar.
Well, and Omar's argument is actually, I think, making my point more than it's making his point. Christian McCaffrey played with nobody in Carolina behind a terrible offensive line and didn't have a great quarterback, and yet he still put up numbers. And if you want to talk about stats, Christian McCaffrey has outgained Terrell Davis in overall scrimmage yards by about 1,500.
And touchdowns by a wide margin.
Yeah, well, TD's got 65 touchdowns, and McCaffrey has 81. So a few more, and he has played, I mean, McCaffrey's now played 9 years, and Terrell Davis played seven. And that's always my issue with TD, is he only played 7 years, and he had, you know, three really good years. And then you look at his last 3 years, the guy only played 17 games over his last three seasons.
He got to the Hall on a three-year stretch.
Right, and the fact that,
he was amazing, all-pro first team all three of those years, an MVP once.
Top three the other 2 years.
Yeah.
He had three unbelievable years. He was offensive rookie of the year. He came in second as a rookie, obviously. So four great years, and then three really forgettable years, and you're a Hall of Famer. So if that's where the bar is, McCaffrey's already going. And I apologize, Omar.
But, I mean, some of that, I guess, is team success is what Omar is talking about. Now, McCaffrey's been on a team that went to the Super Bowl and lost, been on another team that went to the NFC Championship game and lost. That was his first year as a Niner. But we'll see what the rest of McCaffrey's career plays out as. But this is going to be a big year for him. There is no doubt. All right, 888-957-9570 if you want to keep weighing in. Let's get back to Kyle Shanahan. But first, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ FM and HD1 San Francisco, an Odyssey sports station and the home of the Golden State Warriors and Valkyries, always live on the free Odyssey app, coming to you live from the Laughing Monk Studios. All right, Dibs. Kyle Shanahan, head coach of the Niners, on the TK Show with Tim Kawakami. You can find the TK Show, which is Tim Kawakami's podcast, on the free Odyssey app. And Tim and Kyle were essentially discussing the Niners season ahead, and he was asked about like the window, the Super Bowl window, and it being closed and that sort of thing, or if it's closed, how open is it? How many more years do you have left? And Kyle Shanahan said something really interesting, and he brought it back to 2019. It's a little bit of a long cut, about a minute and a half, but I want to hear Kyle Shanahan explain this, and then I got something to tack on to the end. So here's Kyle Shanahan talking about windows, Super Bowl windows for the 49ers on the TK Show.
We came in and we took over the worst defense in the league. That was ranked 32nd. And we took over the second worst offense in the league. That was ranked 31st. After 1 year, there was one guy left on our offense, and it was Joe Staley. We replaced all 10 guys in 17 and 18. On defense, we had Armstead, Buckner, and Jimmy Ward. And we replaced the other eight. And we did it in 2 years. You got to get lucky with that. You got to work really hard and do good at it. But that's what we had to do there to build it up. And we got to have a chance to win a Super Bowl in 19. And it wasn't luck. Those guys were real. And we were able to sustain that because it was real. And we had made good decisions. We were able to pay those guys and keep them within the rules of the league. And that's why we've had a good run here the last 6 years. And when everyone says, oh, that window's over, it's a different window because of the things I've been saying. But how can you say it's over when there's still really good players there that have been a part of it? Guys like Trent, guys like Christian, guys like Brock. I can go through our defense, but we know Fred and we know Bosa, and I do think we have new guys who are establishing themselves. I hope Demo can keep jumping. I hope Lenore can become more. Mustafa showed that he can be a player last year. I think he'll heal fine from this and eventually come back. Can Ricky keep building? All these things go into play. Pooney, how good he did as a rookie. What are the rookies going to do this year? But that's what we hit so well in 7-18, which allowed us to stay this long and us make smart decisions. We weren't always just selling the farm. We had the guys here and you had to build them the right way. And that's our goal to do that again. What I like is, I don't think you have to go through necessarily a 17 and 18 year to do that, because we didn't just completely get rid of everything and do what I see other sports do sometimes. We still have some good players who can help us be competitive, and let's see how much these young guys come so we can put ourselves in a chance to win a championship, which is all our goal is.
So Kyle Shanahan didn't come out and say this explicitly, Dibs, but the way I interpret everything that Kyle Shanahan said there, and there were hints, you know, dispersed throughout the entire conversation that Kyle Shanahan had with Tim Kawakami on the TK Show. What I take away from that is the Niners are treating this 2025 season like, in their mind, this is 2019 all over again. And you remember what the context was for 2019. They came off of a terrible year in 2018 when they went just 4-12. That was the year that Jimmy Garoppolo tore his ACL in week 3 in Kansas City, if memory serves.
Oh, that's right.
Because they got beat by Minnesota week 1. They returned home. I think they beat Tampa Bay or someone like that at home. Maybe it was Pittsburgh. And then they lost week 3 in Kansas City to Patrick Mahomes, one of his first starts. And Jimmy Garoppolo tore his ACL in that one. So it was a terrible 2018. But they went into 2019 with a backbone. They went in with a group of players that were proven that they knew they could rely on. And that group in 2019 was players like their veteran left tackle, Joe Staley. Who else did they have in 2019? They had an established and a paid quarterback, a very highly paid quarterback in Jimmy Garoppolo. You know, they paid him a lot 2 years prior after his first stint as a 49ers quarterback. They made him at the time the highest paid quarterback in the NFL. So you've got a couple of pieces, right? You've got the established paid quarterback. You've got a veteran left tackle. You've got some, you know, veteran defenders that you believe in DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead and Richard Sherman. And he also mentioned Jimmy Ward. You have the beginnings of a quality group. But you had young, unproven wide receivers, right? You had Deebo Samuel as a rookie. You had an unknown Kendrick Bourne. And the guy who ultimately became maybe your number one wide receiver that year, Emmanuel Sanders, he was a midseason acquisition. He was not on the team to begin the year. And, okay, there seems to be a lot of similarities, Dibs, between that like baseline of a team and what the Niners are entering this year with. In 2025, they have an established and a highly paid quarterback in Brock Purdy. They have a veteran left tackle, one of the best in the game, just like Joe Staley was in Trent Williams. They have young and unproven wide receivers in Ricky Pearsall. And Juwan is proven, but not as if he's a superstar by any stretch of the imagination. But you also have defensively some established veterans. You got Nick Bosa.
Yep.
And you've got Fred Warner. And you've got D'Amador Lenore, all guys that Kyle Shanahan was talking about. So how did that 2019 team, Dibs, go from 4-12 to 13-3? You had your veterans, you know, Garoppolo and Staley and Buckner and Armstead and Richard Sherman. You had those guys, and they all played well. But then your youngsters, guys that you just had drafted or drafted the year prior, all hit. Deebo, as a rookie, was great. Nick Bosa, as a rookie, was great. Dre Greenlaw, as a rookie, was great. Even some of the other names. A young Mike McGlinchey held down your right tackle spot for the whole year. Emmanuel Mosley, at a nickel corner spot, he was pretty darn good. All of those young players who previously were not nearly as good or were not even on your team, they popped to certain degrees. So the way the Niners, Dibs, are treating this year is, all right, we've got our pieces. We've got our veterans that we know that are good. Now we just need what happened in 2019 to happen in 2025. You need your youngsters to take steps and your rookies to play good. And if that happens, Dibs, then you could see a similar trajectory than what happened in 2019, which was when they went 13-3 and were the one seed in the NFC.
And the one commonality is that year your NFC crossover was the NFC South.
Huh.
And you've got it again this year. And that year when you did have the NFC South as your crossover, you were pretty good. You beat New Orleans. 48-46 was that game.
I remember that game.
That game was an absolute shootout.
That was the George Kittle crazy 4th-and-3.
The stiff arm, right?
He carried like 3 Saints defenders for 20 yards.
You beat Carolina 51-13 in that season. You lost to Atlanta 29-22, but by and large, offensively, that team was a monster. You averaged 30 points a game offensively. But it's interesting when you talk about that as a comp, because you were just, you know, mentioning it, and Shanahan said it, like the drafts. You had 2017, you got Kittle in the 5th round. 2018, you got Fred in the 3rd. You got 2019, you had Bosa in the 1st. You got Deebo. You got Dre Greenlaw. So that team, 2019, was built over the course of a couple of drafts, 3 drafts where you got core guys, many of whom are still there. And so you look at last year, and we've talked about it a bunch, where you hit on almost every one of your draft picks. And even in 2023, you didn't do quite as well, but D. Winters was a draft in that class, and you hope now that he matriculates into being a starter.
Yeah.
Jair Brown has been a contributor. I don't know if he's going to be, you know, up for the job and really steps in and
will probably play a lot, at least early in the year while Mustafa is out.
But you hope that he can, you know, be at least somebody who's not a starter, but at least a rotational piece. And then last year it's Green and Pooney and Pearsall and Mustafa and even Garendo and Cowing. Those are guys who you're going to rely on. So this year doesn't have to be like the year before the year. If the drafted players this year, if you can get some impact from them and you get some relative health, I do think that you can be a threat considering the schedule you have this year.
Now, that is a big if. Like, the guys that they're talking about, that Kyle Shanahan is talking about, that hit that led to that 2019 year. I mean, you're talking about guys that have been all pros for you. Nick Bosa and Deebo Samuel and Dre Greenlaw, who's been awesome. And, of course, Fred Warner the year prior to that. And 1 year prior to that, George Kittle. Like, you're talking about hitting on draft picks to a level that is really difficult to replicate. Now, that is what it's going to take. Like, that's just what happens in the NFL. But, like, if I were to take you back to the beginning of 2019, Dibs, and I were to say, like, forget what happened, if you could, like, we're living in a fantasy land here, but if you could go back to 2019, the beginning of 2019, like, July 23rd, 2019, beginning of training camp in 2019, and I were to ask you, what are the odds the Niners win the division and have a legitimate shot to go deep in the playoffs? And I ask you that same question today about this team. You'd feel more confident in this team than you did in 2019.
Probably.
I don't think there's any question about it. Because in 2019, you were coming off of a year when you went 4-12.
4-12, but you lost your quarterback. And, you know, you wound up with C.J. Mullins and Nick Beathard, as I like to call them. Because they basically were...
I think that's wrong, but I don't know them enough to really know if that is wrong.
Those guys were basically the same quarterback. Neither one of them was a starter, but you started them both, and you struggled. And, you know, Jimmy Garoppolo, looking back, you can see that he is not an absolute world beater. And Brock Purdy is better now than Jimmy Garoppolo ever was, yet... To your point, 2019, Jimmy Garoppolo was back. He was healthy.
He was great in 2019.
And they averaged 30 points a game. And I'm just looking at the log here, and the one game I do remember, they beat Washington on the road 9-0 in an absolute monsoon.
I remember that.
That was the game that was like, you know, a foot of water on the field.
I remember Bosa doing a belly slide after when the game ended in a puddle that was on the field.
Your defense coming out of the bye, you had a week 4 bye. You gave up 3 points to Cleveland, 7 to the Rams, and none to the Redskins. So your defense was not the best in football, but very, very good. And then the offense, I'm just looking here, you put up 51 against Carolina, as mentioned, 28, 24, 36, 37, 48 to beat New Orleans. When the defense wasn't awesome, the offense picked them up. It was complimentary football at its finest.
Yeah, and the 209 on the Boxer and Gerson work injury attorney's text line writes, the Niners had better depth in 2019. I guess it depends when you are talking about when you thought they had better depth, because you go into 2019 and you're uncertain if they have any starters in 2019. You don't know who Debo's going to be. You're hopeful that Nick Bosa, you know, a top five draft pick is going to be great. Who else did they draft that year in 2019? You don't know exactly who Dre Greenlaw is going to be. Is he going to be good enough to play alongside Fred Warner? And Fred Warner, by the way, was entering his second year. It's not as if he was all-pro Fred. You had questions all over the place. We think back at 2019 and think of it as this amazing team because, of course, they were. But we had no clue what we were in store for, what was in store for us in 2019, beginning the year. There's a reality, Dibs, where this year, and again, I get that it's not the likeliest scenario that you have a similar return on this year's draft and last year's draft as, say, the 2019 draft, but there's a world where Pearsall is healthy, has 1,000 yards, Renardo Green takes a step forward as your number two corner opposite Deebo, and he feels like a piece for you for the next 7 years. Dominic Pooney continues to perform and entrenches himself as the right guard for a number of years going forward. Mykael Williams becomes the best opposite pass rusher to Nick Bosa they've had since he was drafted in 2019. Alfred Collins, who's likely going to start on the interior, you know, handles himself maybe the way someone like Armstead did early in his career and becomes a longtime Niner. I know it's a lot of ifs there, Dibs. My only point is there were so many ifs about 2019, and those ifs came true, and they became the best team in football. It's not out of the question that that could happen again this year.
And I think if you look at just the roster of that team offensively versus the roster of this team, you would look at this team and say, yeah, I like their chances even more. And, you know, if you go back to that year and you talk about them running the football, it was a three-headed monster of Breida, Mostert, and Coleman, Tevin Coleman.
Yeah.
Those were your three running backs, none of whom even got to 800 yards.
Mostert kind of took over late in the year and became the guy.
He did. Yeah. He was the guy, but, you know, you look at the offensive line and you had Laken Tomlinson, Michael Person, Weston Richburg was your center. Mike McGlinchey, as you mentioned, and Justin School. They, for the most part, Joe Staley played 41% of the snaps at tackle. I think he sustained an injury along the way. But that O-line is a lot like this O-line where, you know, not many household names, and yet the Shanahan scheme, and you were able to run the ball more than you had to pass it, and you just went out there and you rocked teams.
So I guess the easy question, Dibs, because everything that I'm hearing Kyle Shanahan say and everything that I'm feeling relies on the draft and relies on having to hit on your draft picks. And it seems like last year they hit on a lot of those picks. Jury, of course, is out on this year's picks. But the question becomes, the only way, likely the only way for the 49ers to, as Kyle Shanahan said, start a different window. He said, no, the window isn't closed, but it's open, but it's a different window. We're starting a new window. This is an entirely different, like, there's some overlap, but it's a new grouping of players. This is a different window. Only way for you to open up this different window to the point where it's as wide as it was the last 5 years is to draft well. So the question at 888-957-9570 is, do you trust this group to draft well enough to keep it up? Because this is the only way that you can do that. When you have these gigantic contracts, do you trust them to draft well enough to get the job done? Do you have faith that Mykael Williams and Alfred Collins will prove to be down in and down out starters for the Niners for years to come? Will Renardo Green take a step forward? When Mustafa comes back from injury, will he be good enough? I mean, it's going to be as simple as that. The draft is the lifeblood of NFL teams, especially ones that have all the contracts the Niners do.
Right.
It's as simple as draft well, you'll be good, and you can win a Super Bowl. Draft poorly, there's very little chance you can win a Super Bowl.
And that's the Baltimore model. If you look at their draft classes year over year, they do better than almost any team in football. And because of that, they're able to sustain being a very good team. And I think Pittsburgh has done a good job as well, where they're always a competitive team because they draft well. And now Green Bay, when you look at their offense especially and what they've put into their offense through the draft, they become a team that you can model. And if you would ask me this question a year ago, I would be less bullish than I am now.
But I probably would have said hell no.
Right, but coming off of last year, and you look at the 8 picks they made, and if you want to grade each pick, I mean, Pooney is an A.
Oh, yeah.
Renardo Green is probably an A- at the worst. Ricky Pearsall, TBD, but I think he's trending toward a high B. Mustafa is an A- as well. Garendo, probably a solid B. And so you go through all their picks, and just last year, they did very, very well. Now, 2023, not so much.
And 2022.
Right.
And 2021.
Well, and, you know, there's hits in there. 2021 or 2022, they got a guy named Brock Purdy, so that's got to count for something.
2021, you got D'Amador Lenore, and you got Hufanga, and you got Elijah Mitchell. Those are all late.
And Aaron Banks, who turned out to be, you know, a starter for you. And so,
but also Trey Lance and Trey Sermon and Ambry Thomas.
And we can pick and pop the good versus the bad. I do think that last year makes me feel a little bit more confident.
Absolutely.
Because I'm with you. A year ago, I would have been like, no, heck no. I don't believe in their draftability, their ability to scout and find guys. And also, you have to look at the undrafted players that they're able to bring in and keep. And I think Jordan Mason is among them where, you know, you found Jordan Mason and he was a very good player. And I know you don't have him anymore.
Now
but
a Viking.
I do think that you get credit for that as well. Even though you didn't draft somebody, if you bring him in, you get credit for that.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Now, they have, of course, had some hits. But recently, of late, it's been a lot of high-profile misses. We were just making fun of Jake Moody, a third-round pick 2 years ago. Also, in that same third round 2 years ago, you drafted Cam Latu, who never played a game for you at tight end. So they've had some crazy, crazy bad misses. I mean, they should just avoid the third round. They drafted Dominic Pooney in the third round last year, and you had a couple of picks in the third round this year. But you go back to the third round 2023 and 2022 and 2021, you have miss after miss after miss after miss after miss.
2019, Jalen Hurd, third rounder.
That's a good point, too.
I mean,
and they didn't have a third rounder in 2020. So
thank God.
Dominic Pooney just broke the curse of the third-round pick for the 49ers. Just some of the names.
Ty Davis Price, Danny Gray. I'm looking at it, too, Brandon. Oh, I mean,
Trey Sermon, Ambry Thomas. It's just, okay, Kyle Shanahan, don't ever draft a running back in the third round. Just don't ever draft a running back in the third round ever again, and you will be fine. It's as simple as that.
Will Redmond back in 2016. That was pre-Shanahan. Will Redmond out of Mississippi State.
Oh, and yes, of course.
You can go all the way back. Eli Harold in 2015 was a third rounder. And, you know, you can play this game all you want. And you go pre-Shanahan, it becomes unfair. But I look at last year's draft, not this past draft, but last year, where they absolutely knocked it out of the park. Maybe they have figured out what exactly they want in the draft. So I'm hopeful that this past year that they got, of their 11 picks, if you get, I don't know, 5 or 6 who can actually play and help you, that to me is a win.
Yeah, no. But I see, I feel a lot of similarities between 2019 and what 2025 is. Of course, in 2019, you had the backdrop of being terrible, not just for a year or 2 years before that, but for a long time before that. And the Niners right now have the backdrop of a rough season, but being great for years leading up to this. So it's really difficult to, I think, take the history out of your brain when thinking about what 2025 is. But if you think of it in the context of what 2019 is, I think it makes a lot more sense. And the strategy and the plan becomes a lot clearer in my mind. What about you? 888-957-9570. Let's go back out to the phone lines. Dre in Lemoore is up next. Dre, you're on with Dibs and Grandy in for Willard. What's up?
Hey, guys. Interesting combo you got there. Now, this year's team compared to 2019, you guys are giving Debo a little bit too much credit in 2019. I don't remember him doing that much. He did a little bit. Now, Dre Greenlaw did start. I can't remember the name of the guy. He had like a crazy name that did start, and he got hurt. And then when Dre came in, he pretty much took over.
Yeah, Quan Alexander Greenlaw started alongside Fred to begin that year.
Yeah, it was Quan. And I remember I was kind of worried when he got hurt, but Dre really took over. That tackle on Sunday Night Football against Seattle, saved first place.
Yep.
Something special right there. Now, what the team has never recovered from is getting rid of Buckner. Buckner was a stud. Buckner, alongside our guy from Ohio State, that would have just been a no-brainer for 10 years. I'd save a couple of dollars on Armstead. That made no sense to me. And, hey, guys, if I could just bring up the other day, I heard you say it's better to have loved and lost than never loved at all. I'll never be able to give Craig for fumbling the three-peat, and I'll never be able to forgive Harbaugh for not giving that ball to Frank Gore after he just ran 36 yards to the 6-yard line. I would rather not love.
Wow. Okay, Dre. Appreciate the call. I disagree, but that's all right. I'd rather be on the doorstep and be heartbroken than never get my hopes up in the first place.
Yeah, that's real heartbreak. And, you know, he mentioned two really tough ones, Roger Craig with the fumble and Harbaugh not giving the ball to Frank Gore. But ask a fan of, I don't know, the Carolina Panthers, for example. You got the one trip to the Super Bowl and you lost, and there's not another one in sight. Or maybe the Arizona Cardinals, same thing. You've
ask
had the one
Minnesota
trip.
The Vikings.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, if you're old enough, you remember Minnesota and, you know, Fran Tarkenton being unable to win the Super Bowl. And so, yeah, you could pick a number of different fan bases who have never actually been there. Buffalo Bills, great example, where you got to 4 straight, you lost all 4. Maybe the Buffalo Bill fan would say, yeah, I'd rather not love having had that level of heartbreak 4 straight years.
It's also one thing, and appreciate the call, Dre, it's one thing to have the backdrop be, well, we just won the last 2 Super Bowls, and we came oh so close to a third in a row, and we didn't quite get it done. It's like a Warrior fan saying, man, 2019 in the finals, I'm just so, obviously we were, but I'm just so heartbroken that Clay and KD went down with injuries and we didn't get the three-peat. Like, yeah, of course. But you say that in front of any other fan of any other NBA team, they're going to tell you to shut the hell up.
That's right.
You just won two. What more do you possibly want?
It's greed is what it is. And, you know, you won two and you had just won one prior to that. So you'd won three of the four, and now you're going to cry over, you know, a Toronto one that happened to get away. So I think it's fair to look at it from that standpoint. But, you know, Dre, his feelings are real.
Yeah. And what Dre was talking about in terms of the DeForest Buckner miscue, I mean, that's well documented. The Niners probably made a mistake there. Now, it's important to remember the exact context of that, and they decided to trade Buckner because if they kept Buckner and paid him what they knew they were going to have to pay him, that meant saying bye to Armstead. It meant saying bye to, I believe at the time, also Jimmy Ward. And they also were not going to get the draft pick back that ultimately turned into Kinlaw. I don't know. Now, I know Kinlaw was a failure, but you don't even have that swing in the first place. So I understood it in the moment. You just have to ultimately draft better, which brings us back to what we were talking about earlier. But, I mean, Dre is right. That Buckner decision and the execution that followed that decision, it set the Niners back. There is no doubt about it. Now it's just up to them to recover from that. One other piece where I think the Niners have deserved some criticism, Dibs, is their offensive line. And Kyle Shanahan on the TK show, which was released earlier today, you can find it wherever you get your podcasts, including on the free Odyssey app. Tim Kawakami asked Kyle Shanahan about the lack of investment in the offensive line this offseason. Here's what Kyle Shanahan had to say about that.
Free agency is tough. And if we would have done that, not only would we have lost all our guys, but we wouldn't have been able to re-sign Fred or Kittle. And it would have been tough with Brock. So those, it's like, oh man, but now we got to find one in the draft. All right, well, we also got to find a starting DN, a starting three technique, hopefully a nickel, maybe a safety. But we're getting an O-lineman. You look at it each round. And all right, we're in the third round. What do we think of that O-lineman? Man, it's an out, maybe. What do we think of this nickel? What do we think of this D-lineman? Man, this guy looks much more of a starter. This guy, we want him to be that, but he's not. Like, and then the draft just pans out that way. And you get in this situation, and that's what happens. Like, yeah, we're well aware of it. I think people underestimate our O-line. Mm-hmm. It's one of the, I mean, if you go from 2019 to 2024, we're number one team in the league yards per play. Number two is Baltimore. Number three is Tampa. And number four is Green Bay and Kansas City tied. And so all four of those are established Hall of Fame quarterbacks. And we've done it with three different guys in those times. Why have we been able to? Because we have a really good O-line, but we've spent our money and investments on a really good defense, on good skill players. Could we do that stuff if we didn't have a really good O-line? Not at all. But everyone sees our investments on it, and we made a big one with Trent. It was only a fourth-round pick, but we have financially. Jake Brendel, go study all the centers in the league. Jake's a hell of a player. Colton McKivitz, why did we cut him? Mm-hmm. He's on practice squad. Then we let a first-round pick go who got, I think, like $17 million a year, who's a good player, who I really like. I love Mike McGlinchey, but we had to do that so we could sign some other players. How are we playing with Colton? He got cut. If anyone really studies Colton, Colton's a really good right tackle, and that's really helped us.
There is so much there from Kyle Shanahan. What is in my mind immediately, though, is how he ended that cut, which was, study Jake Brendel, study Colton McKivitz. They're great centers and right tackles. Well, some of the best in the league. Yep. If you just were to study them, you'd know that.
And maybe we need to study it a little bit more, and we need to start to break down the film a little bit more and do our homework. And I can't help but think about the 2019 year that we've been referencing throughout this conversation, and I mentioned it already, where you had Mostert and you had Coleman and Breida. That was your three-headed monster at running back, and those three combined for 1,900 yards.
Pretty good.
Really good. And nobody would ever mistake Mostert, Breida, and Coleman for Christian McCaffrey or Saquon Barkley or Derrick Henry, right?
But in the aggregate, Dibs.
Well, in the aggregate, and it's in defense of Kyle Shanahan and his offensive line, you can't have these three guys, Mostert, Breida, and Tevin Coleman, three guys who are not Hall of Fame backs, three guys who don't have breakaway speed, and who, I mean, I know that Breida the Cheetah and Mostert, they're both very fast, but these are guys who, were Kyle Shanahan creations, and they had these kind of years because of Shanahan and the offensive line. So I do think it's fair to listen to Kyle and, you know, kind of give him his props, because in 2019, you were able to do good things offensively. Jimmy Garoppolo and a receiving core, as you mentioned, that wasn't elite. You had a rookie Deebo Samuel. You had three virtual no-names at running back, and you averaged 30 points a game. You got to have a good offensive line to be able to do that.
Yeah, you do. And he,
you do.
He laid out, well, we have the best, what was the stat, yards per play? Is that what he referenced?
Yep.
Best yards per play over the last however many years, and the teams that are right behind him are the teams with great, great quarterbacks. And he says you can't possibly do that unless you have a good offensive line. I would argue that your offensive line can't be flat out terrible, and the Niners' offensive line, when healthy, hasn't ever been flat out terrible. I think they've generally been around middle of the pack. So much of their greatness offensively is credit to Kyle Shanahan, the play caller, for scheming things up and for the crazy amount of talent that they had offensively at running back, at wide receiver, at tight end. And, you know, as a result of Brock Purdy's contract being so cheap, your ability to have all of those guys. But the other line of thinking is you could still average a high number of yards per play if you had lesser talent at skill positions, but better talent between the tackles, or the tackles and between the tackles, your offensive line. Now, as far as the Niners go for this year, I have a hard time feeling the way Shanahan does, because the offensive line last year was pretty suspect, even when Trent Williams was playing, and they let a starter leave, and they made no intention of acquiring somebody else to fill in that hole. It's likely going to be Ben Bartsch, who was on the team last year, that plays at left guard this year. We'll see how it all plays out. But it was a questionable offensive line last year, Dibs, and a backup last year is your solution. So unless you see a lot of jumps from those guys, which I suppose is possible, it's what I was talking about with the other positions, but you don't have a lot of draft picks who are waiting in the wakes. You have a lot of scrap heap guys that are there waiting in the wakes. Unless those guys take gigantic steps forward, I don't see how the offensive line improves upon what last year was.
But it comes down to the execution and also the scheme. And I don't know, maybe you need to do a little bit more homework and actually look at these guys. Just looking at Pro Football Focus from last year, they had Jake Brendel, the center, as the number 17 center in Pro Football.
Sounds about right to me.
Yeah, I mean, that's
average.
About dead center,
yeah.
In the middle. And, you know, Brendel was actually better at run blocking than pass blocking. He was a 71.6 in run blocking, which put him in, I think, 10th among run blocking centers. And so ultimately, that's what the Shanahan offense needs from the center, the guards, the tackles, all the rest of it. And I give Kyle credit for what he's been able to do offensively with a different group of offensive linemen. And this year, to your point, it's going to be even more of a challenge because, you know, you lost Banks and you lost a good backup, and now you've got, I don't know if they're scrap heap guys, and, you know, he went out and he was defending McKivitz, and, you know, you lost McGlinchey and stuff, and, you know, you had McKivitz, and he's gone in there, and, you know, he thinks he's been great.
Well, it was funny how he defended McKivitz. He started off defending McKivitz by saying, and now McKivitz, we cut him. He went to the practice squad, and then we brought him back. But you cut him in the first place. I mean, he must have just transformed night and day from that moment to where they're comfortable making him the starting right tackle for not just 1 year, but for multiple years. And
yep.
Then what's on the back of everybody's mind is what happened in the Super Bowl. And you get down near the goal line, and your offensive line can't simply communicate, and you don't execute, and the best pass rusher on the opposing team gets a free run at Brock Purdy, and as a result, you kick a field goal, and as a result, you lose a Super Bowl.
Yeah, that was Burford, right? The right guard.
Yes.
I think Burford was the one who made that mistake, but, you know, McKivitz he's had his struggles, and again, going to the Pro Football Focus ratings, and this is just a metric. Trent Williams was number 7 last year among tackles. Philadelphia had the number one and the number five, by the way, which tells you what a really good offensive line looks like.
Yeah.
And you go down to number 34, Colton McKivitz, right behind, actually in a flat-footed tie with Mike McGlinchey. McGlinchey and McKivitz both had a 72.2, tied for 34th.
That's pretty funny.
So your replacement is basically the exact same guy that McGlinchey was in Denver.
That's pretty funny. So, I mean, the decision to let McGlinchey walk, that's a perfectly fine one. Like, he was making a lot of money. Like, I am not suggesting, Dibs, that the Niners should have paid Aaron Banks what Green Bay was offering him. That they should pay Jalen Moore what the Chiefs were offering him, that they should have paid McGlinchey what the Broncos were offering him a couple of years ago. I'm not saying that. Just that I think you could have used more draft capital on positions like this so you could have spots like you had in the 2022 season. You had drafted Aaron Banks. You drafted Aaron Banks in 2021. He sat behind Laken Tomlinson at left guard for a year. Laken Tomlinson, much like Aaron Banks this year, hit the free agent market, got a big offer from the Jets. Niners did not feel comfortable matching. So what happened then? The Niners start playing Aaron Banks. Now you get to a spot where, okay, Aaron Banks is going to hit the free agent market. We want him back, but not at the price he's likely going to get offered. So let's have somebody waiting in the wakes. Let's use a draft pick the year prior or the year of and have his replacement waiting. And my only argument is, Dibs, they haven't done that. Now, I could be proven wrong if Ben Bartsch comes in and turns out to be really, really good. But if he's not, I think this point is an entirely fair one, that they miscalculated the need for these guys and they didn't do it early enough to find replacements for when those guys hit the open market and leave, as has happened in years past with this very team.
It's a challenge, and just what Shanahan said in that sound clip you played, they are prioritizing defense, and I think they're right to do so, and the first five picks in this last draft were defense, and I do also look at Dominic Pooney last year where he was the 86th pick overall, third-round pick, and so you saw that player and you used that draft capital on a guy who so far through 1 year, that looks like it's a great pick in the third round. I like the player and I like the pick. And, you know, Shanahan was explaining that you get to a certain spot in the draft and you're not just going to take a guy because you think you have a positional need. If he's not going to be somebody who's good enough, then you go to a different position. Now, it's risky because all of us going into the draft last year were thinking you need a tackle. Tackle of the future. Maybe that's what you do with the number 11 pick. Maybe you think about getting that, you know, left tackle to replace Trent or somebody who can play right tackle now because McKivitz isn't that good. Well, they see things differently and, you know, they're top four in yards per play and stuff. And so it's hard to look at it and really, I think, dispute it.
More Shanahan on the offensive line. And he's talking about what I just brought up, the Aaron Banks, Laken Tomlinson decision back in 2022. Here's more Shanahan on their strategy on the offensive line.
Yeah, we lost Banks, just like we lost Laken. Mm-hmm. And everyone asked, how could we lose Laken for $16 million a year? Because I remember Branch saying in there, because Banks was a bust. I go, how's he a bust? He goes, well, he didn't play last year. I go, I know, Laken was in front of him. I think he'll play this year now. And we had a guy who came in that everyone thought was a bust because he didn't play as a rookie, because I guess second-round picks have to. He ended up being a hell of a player, one we'd have liked to keep. But he got about $18 million to go play guard. Yeah, we could have re-signed him. But then you'd see a lot of our players that we don't have. And that's why we want some guys that, you know, Bartsch has been here these last 2 years. Zakel has been here these last 2 or 3 years. Zakel played some good stuff at the end of last year that he got an opportunity to because of injuries. Spencer Burford, who was a fourth-round pick a few years ago, he started half the year in our Super Bowl year. He's capable of being a guard. Like, there are guys who can do it. I know we wanted to invest, but it didn't plan out that. It wasn't the right decision based off of what our choices were. And that's why we have to keep working to get there, and we are there. We have a solid O-line. You get injuries and stuff, and good luck for anybody. Yeah. I wish we had a second-round pick there, like Banks, who didn't have to play till his third year or second year, whenever he did. I wish.
Second, yeah.
We're not in that luxury. That's why we got to address it soon.
They do have to address it soon. And, yeah, you don't have a second-round pick waiting. You could have had a third-round pick waiting. You made a third-round pick on Jake Moody and Cam Latu, a kicker and a tight end. The kicker has been questionable so far in his career, and the tight end hasn't played a single snap for you. So, like, and I know we can pick and choose misses in every single draft. They had the opportunity to do it. They just thought it was worthwhile investing elsewhere. And that's fine. They've had a lot of success, but at some point, the offensive line will come back to bite them. I just hope it does not happen this year. Ben Barge better be good, is the point that I'm trying to make, Dibs. Otherwise, this feels like mismanagement.
Yes, and you also have Nick Zakel and Spencer Burford drafted in 2022, and Kyle just said that in the clip where, you know, sometimes you have a guy sit for a couple of years and stuff, and you think that maybe you got to slip that in there. You hope that these guys who were drafted then, and, you know, Zakel has played a little bit, and, you know, Burford we mentioned before from the Super Bowl, these are guys who you drafted, you liked them then, and so now is going to be their time to step up and be depth pieces. And so now we're really going to get to see whether or not those draft picks that they actually did make, they invested in those players, and now they move up the depth chart, and now it's their time to get out there and play and stuff.
Well, my favorite thing was he brought up Nick Zakel, I think, and he said, Nick Zakel, you know, he played some of the last year for us, and, you know, he showed some good stuff.
Some
good stuff.
He showed some good stuff.
He even said stuff when it wasn't in his normal context of just and stuff. He showed some good stuff.
Right, and this will be now his, fourth year? And so, you know, you draft these guys, and sometimes it is a draft and stash or a draft and develop, and you're in a spot now where your offensive line is going to need Burford and Zakel and Brendel and others to step up and be good.
I just don't have a lot of confidence that that's what's going to happen. Now, I mean, to their credit, they have always kind of had Dibs like a questionable offensive line. Like, it hasn't always been, it's not star power. You have a great left tackle, whether it was Staley or Trent, and then you just have a lot of other guys. And you've got two solid spots at left tackle and at right guard with Pooney, and then you've got a questions, in my opinion, elsewhere, but that's kind of how they've done it. We'll see if that's going to be good enough for them this year. But we got more to talk about, more Kyle Shanahan, plus some sound from Nick Bosa and George Kittle today at training camp as the Niners wrapped up day one, practice one of training camp. We can get to that when we come back and when we close out the show on this Wednesday. We're sponsored by Safeway. It's Willard and Dibs. Dibs and Grandy with you. Back with more next on 95.7 The Game.
Now, back to Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Welcome back. Dibs and Grandy with you here on Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game. We got about 10 more minutes left with you. You got a thought on day one of Niners training camp practice? Give us a call. Shoot us a text now, 888-957-9570. I want to play something from Nick Bosa and George Kittle before we get out of here today, Dibs. First of all, I wanted to ask you about this. I get these emails daily from The Athletic, and today they put out a little, not kind of a newsletter type thing, and they have this piece that goes out where it's called The Pulse Poll, and it's a specific article that they have on The Athletic, I think every single day. And the Pulse Poll today, Dibs, they asked their readers to vote on the most underrated NFL teams entering this coming season. And The Athletic readers voted the 49ers as the third most underrated team entering the season.
Underrated?
Yeah.
With a win total of 10.5? I don't know how you can be underrated unless they go out and they go 14-3 or 15-2. I don't find that becomes underrated. If you have a Vegas win total of 10.5, the expectation is 10 or 11. 10 might get you in the playoffs. 11, most likely will. So if the Niners perform where Vegas expects them, and, you know, Vegas, and I'm saying that in general as the odds makers here, but if they win 10 or 11, that doesn't make them underrated to me at all.
The Broncos, the most underrated team, apparently.
I'll buy that.
The Bengals, second most underrated. Although the Bengals are embroiled in the biggest holdout in the NFL. Trey Hendrickson, and they had issues with Trey Hendrickson a long time ago. I don't know if you saw But of course, report day was yesterday for the Bengals as well. As everyone else in the Bengals was reporting, Trey Hendrickson was posting on social media a picture of him in Florida. So he's not even anywhere near the state of Ohio. But the Bengals, apparently, the second most underrated team. The Niners, the third most. Then the Chargers, and then the Steelers. They round out your top five most underrated NFL team.
I like the Steelers, and I think the Chargers are one because everybody looks at Kansas City and thinks, well, they're just going to run roughshod over the division. I do think the Chargers, coming off of last year and the second year of Harbaugh, it does take time for a coach to remake an organization or a roster, rather, in his own image and the way he wants things to go. So I think the Chargers will be a little bit better. And Pittsburgh's an interesting one because Mike Tomlin, he never has losing seasons. And yet everybody looks at that division and thinks, okay, Baltimore and Cincinnati with all their shiny toys, and well, maybe Pittsburgh will be okay. But Pittsburgh is always, I mean, if not great, they're always good. He's never had a losing season, right, Mike Tomlin?
I don't think so. No, he's had 500 seasons.
Which is not a losing season.
Not a losing season.
And last year he gutted out of 9-8, and they were a playoff team. So I do think that they're one that really probably is underrated because everybody expects, well, this is the year. I mean, Pittsburgh's going to struggle, right? And then they just go out and they win 9 or 10 every year.
So does that mean you're a believer in Aaron Rodgers as quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers?
I mean, sure. I don't love Aaron Rodgers, but if he can be upright, I do think that Pittsburgh is a good enough team that even if Aaron Rodgers is not as good as he once was, as long as he doesn't turn the ball over a lot, and Aaron Rodgers, throughout his career, he's been very good about not turning the ball over, and Pittsburgh's defense, good enough. They've got a decent running game, if not better than decent. So, yeah, I think Aaron Rodgers actually might fit there.
We'll see. Time will tell. What about most overrated NFL teams? And this, again, courtesy of a poll The Athletic ran of their readers. Athletic readers, Dibs, believe the Packers are the most overrated team entering the season.
Interesting. I can see it, I guess, but I look at offensively, and they've got weapons all over the field, and the quarterback is still young and developing. I think Jordan Love is good. I like the coach, and I love the weapons, so I'm not sure if I buy that as overrated. I would put Detroit up there ahead of Green Bay as an overrated team.
The Lions did not appear in the top five. The top five, as voted on by Athletic readers: Packers number one, Texans number two, Commanders number three, Vikings number four, and Chiefs number five.
Yeah, Vikings. I get
the Vikings.
We don't know about the quarterback, and you know they think he's going to be good. They drafted him and had him just chill because he got hurt, and now it's time for him to come out and play well for Minnesota. Kansas City makes perfect sense because everyone's going to want to hate on the Chiefs. I mean, I'm looking at my my list here of Super Bowls, and I'm doing a little bit of a deep dive, and I'll have more on this tomorrow. But the idea, Evan kind of got me going on this, Evan Giddings filling in for Guru for the rest of the week.
Okay.
The idea of, you know, teams that make the playoffs don't necessarily have a chance to win the Super Bowl like a top-seeded team might, like the expectations. So if you limp in as a 6 or 7 seed, do you really have a shot to win the Super Bowl? So I'm taking a historical look at the seeds. What was the seed of the team in each conference that went to the Super Bowl and won the Super Bowl?
Mm.
So like what percentage of conference representatives in the Super Bowl are the one seed? So I'm just kind of doing and I'm going to look at every Super Bowl. I'm going back. And it's a little different because it's been 5 years now since they went to a 7-team playoff format.
And only one bye at that point.
Right. The only team that gets a bye is the one seed.
Yeah.
And in those 5 years, Kansas City was a one seed this last year. They lost. The Niners were a one seed. They lost.
But they made it to the Super Bowl.
Correct. 2022, Kansas City and Philly were both one seeds.
They both went to the Super Bowl.
2021, neither one seed went. The Rams were a 4. Cincinnati was a 4. And then 2020, Tampa was a 5. And they beat Kansas City, who was the 1. So in just that small sample, half of the one seeds, 5 of 10, made it to the Super Bowl. So just a little look at, you know, the one seed. And that's just when the one seed got the bye. The two seed used to also get a bye. Yeah. And, you know, if you go way back and I'm looking at, you know, the Dallas and Buffalo, 1993, both one seed. So it seems like back in the day, the one seed had a much better track record of actually making it all the way to the Super Bowl than they do of late.
Yeah. The one seed's importance has been magnified now because you have a major leg up on everybody, not just seeds 3, 4, 5, and 6. You have a major leg up now on seeds 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Right.
Because you're the only team that gets the bye.
And even at that, though, only half of the one seeds since they went to that have made it to the Super Bowl.
And even fewer, of course, have won the Super Bowl.
Right. Only one. Yeah. Kansas City over Philly, and they both were one seeds back in 2022, the 2023 Super Bowl.
And who knows? If Purdy doesn't get hurt in the NFC Championship game, maybe the one seed Eagles are not even in the Super Bowl in the first place. So who the hell knows? But yeah, okay. Interesting there. The biggest thing I think that came out of Niners camp today, Dibs, practice number one, and pads are not on. They do 3 days of non-pads, and then pads will go on Sunday. But the biggest thing that came out of Niners camp today, it's that Juwan Jennings was out there and practicing. Here's George Kittle on having Juwan out there.
I mean, Juwan was awesome today. Great energy in the locker room yesterday, great energy today, his normal self. So just appreciate him attacking it like there's nothing going on.
All right, there's George Kittle giving it to Juwan. I think whenever this Juwan situation gets resolved in the last two days, Dibs, makes me feel very strongly that it will be a reworked contract and not a trade. I think we're going to have conversations, and we might have Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch and maybe whoever come out and say, Juwan showing up and practicing just made this such an easier experience for everybody involved. We want all of our players to do that in the future.
And you don't even have to say the second part of that, but I think you heard a little bit of that from Kyle today of, you know, this is what we need him to do. So Juwan comes out and he's handling his business the right way, which is, look, and we talked about this yesterday, you need 12 wide receivers in camp. And Pearsall's not ready, so you have 11. Ayuk can't go, so now you have 10. If Juwan isn't going to play, now you're down to 9. So you do need to have a certain amount of camp bodies regardless. But if Juwan is going to be wide receiver 1, and he is right now, you're damn right you need him out there even on day 1.
And he looks like wide receiver 1 in the limited 11-on-11 drills that they ran at practice number 1 today. All right, that'll do it for us today. What's coming up on the game is brought to you by Fremont Bank, here for you, here for good. It's Best of the Game, an hour of 95.7, the game's best content from the day. And coming up to begin Best of, it is Ben Verlander, our conversation with Justin Verlander's brother, Ben, who joined us earlier today here on Willard and Dibs. You won't want to miss that conversation. His brother Justin, of course, just got his first win this season, believe it or not, here on July 23rd. That conversation will lead off, and then you'll also hear Steiny and Evan, Dibs and myself on the crossover to wrap up Best of the Game in the back half of the 6 o'clock hour. That's all for today, Dibs, and we'll do it again tomorrow, huh?
Yeah, can't wait. It'll be fun tomorrow.
Right, let's do it. For Dibs, for Lucas, for Ken, I'm Mark Grandy. Thanks for tuning in. I'll talk to you tomorrow on 95.7 The Game.